Chapter 4. Mrs. Sellers returned now, with her composure restored, and began to ask after Hawkins' wife, and about his children, and the number of them, and so on, and her examination of the witness resulted in a circumstantial history of the family's ups and downs, and driftings to and fro in the Far West during the previous 15 years. There was a message now, from out back, and Colonel Sellers went out there in answer to it. Hawkins took this opportunity to ask how the world had been using the Colonel during the past half generation. Oh, it's been using him just the same. It couldn't change its way of using him if it wanted to, for he wouldn't let it. I can easily believe that, Mrs. Sellers. Yes, you see, he doesn't change himself, not the least little bit in the world. He's always Mulberry Sellers. I can see that plain enough. Just the same old scheming, generous, good-hearted, moonshiny, hopeful, no-account failure he always was, and still everybody likes him just as well as if he was the shinningest success. They always did. And it was natural, because he was so obliging and accommodating, and had something about him that made it kind of easy to ask help of him, or favors you didn't feel shy, you know, or have that wish you didn't have to try feeling that you have with other people. It's just so, yet, and a body wonders at it too, because he's been shamefully treated, many times, by people that had used him for a ladder to climb up by, and then kicked him down when they didn't need him anymore. For a time you can see he's hurt, his pride's wounded, because he shrinks away from that thing, and don't want to talk about it, and so I used to think now he's learned something, and he'll be more careful hereafter, but laws. In a couple of weeks he's forgotten all about it, and any selfish tramp out of nobody knows where can come, and put up a poor mouth and walk right into his heart with his boots on. It must try your patience pretty sharply sometimes. Oh, no, I'm used to it, and I'd rather have him so than the other way. When I call him a failure, I mean to the world he's a failure, he isn't to me. I don't know as I want him different, much different, anyway. I have to scold him some, snarl at him, you might even call it, but I reckon I do, that just the same, if he was different it's my make. But I'm a good deal less snarly, and more contented when he's a failure than I am when he isn't. Then he isn't always a failure, said Hawking, brightening. Him? Oh, bless you, no. He makes a strike, as he calls it, from time to time. Then's my time to fret and fuss. For the money just flies, first come, first served. Straight off, he loads up the house with cripples, and idiots and stray cats and all the different kinds of poor wrecks that other people don't want and he does. And then when the poverty comes again I've got to clear the most of them out or we'd starve. And that distresses him, and me the same, of course. Here's old Dan and old Ginny, that the sheriff sold south one of the times, that we got bankrupted before the war. They came wandering back after the peace, worn out and used up on the cotton plantations, helpless, and not another lick of work left in their old hides for the rest of this earthly pilgrimage, and we so pinched, oh so pinched for the very crumbs, to keep life in us, and he just flung the door wide, and the way he received them, you'd have thought they had come straight down from heaven in answer to prayer. I took him one side and said, Mulberry, we can't have them, we've nothing for ourselves, we can't feed them. ". He looked at me kind of hurt, and said, turn them out? And they've come to me just as confident, and trusting as, why Polly, I must have bought that confidence sometime, or other a long time ago, and given my note, so to speak. You don't get such things as a gift, and how am I going to go back on a debt like that? And you see, they're so poor, and old, and friendless, and ". But I was ashamed by that time, and shut him off, and somehow felt a new courage in me, and so I said, softly, we'll keep them, the Lord will provide. He was glad, and started to blurt out one of those overconfident speeches of his, but checked himself in time, and said humbly, I will, anyway. It was years and years and years ago. Well, you see those old wrecks are here yet. But don't they do your housework? Laws. The idea. They would if they could. Poor old things, and perhaps they think they do some of it. But it's a superstition. Dan waits on the front door, and sometimes goes on an errand. And sometimes he will see one or both of them letting on to dust around in here, but that's because there's something they want to hear about and mix their gabble into. And they're always around at meals, for the same reason. But the fact is, we have to keep a young Negro girl, just to take care of them, and a Negro woman, to do the housework and help take care of them. Well, they ought to be tolerably happy, I should think. It's no name for it. They quarrel together pretty much all the time, most always about religion, because Dan's a Dunker Baptist, and Ginny's a shouting Methodist, and Ginny believes in special providences and Dan don't, because he thinks he's a kind of a free thinker, and they play and sing plantation hymns together, and talk and chatter just eternally and forever, and are sincerely fond of each other, and think the world of Mulberry, and he puts up patiently with all their spoiled ways and foolishness. And so, well, they're happy enough, if it comes to that. And I don't mind, I've got used to it. I can get used to anything, with Mulberry to help. And the fact is, I don't much care what happens, so long as he's spared to me. Well, here's to him, and hoping he'll make another strike soon. And rake in the lame, the halt and the blind, and turn the house into a hospital again? It's what he would do. I've seen a plenty of that and more. No, Washington, I want his strikes to be mighty moderate ones the rest of the way down the vale. Well then, big strike or little strike, or no strike at all, here's hoping he'll never lack for friends, and I don't reckon he ever will, while there's people around who know enough to him lack for friends. And she tilted her head up with a frank pride. Why, Washington, you can't name a man that's anybody that isn't fond of him. I'll tell you privately, that I've had Satan's own time to keep them from appointing him to some office or other. They knew he'd no business with an office, just as well as I did, but he's the hardest man to refuse anything to, a body ever saw. Mulberry Sellers with an office. Law's goodness, you know what that would be like. Why, they'd come from the ends of the earth to see a circus like that. I'd just as leaves be married to Niagara Falls, and done with it. After a reflective pause she added, having wandered back, in the interval, to the remark that had been her text : friends? Oh, indeed, no man ever had more, and such friends. Grant, Sherman, Sheridan, Johnston, Longstreet, Lee, many's the time they've sat in that chair you're sitting in, Hawkins was out of it instantly, and contemplating it with a reverential surprise, and with the odd sense of having trodden shod upon holy ground, they, he said. Oh, indeed, yes, a many and a many a time. He continued to gaze at the chair fascinated, magnetized, and for once in his life, that continental stretch of dry prairie which stood for his imagination was afire, and across it was marching a slanting flame front that joined its wide horizons together, and smothered the skies with smoke. He was experiencing what one or another drowsing, geographically ignorant alien experiences every day in the year, when he turns a dull and indifferent eye out of the car window, and it falls upon a certain station sign which reads, Stratford-on-Avon. Mrs. Sellers went gossiping comfortably along. Oh, they like to hear him talk, especially if their load is getting rather heavy on one shoulder, and they want to shift it. He's all air, you know, breeze, you may say, and he freshens them up. It's a trip to the country, they say. Many a time he's made General Grant laugh, and that's a tidy job, I can tell you, and as for Sheridan, his eye lights up, and he listens to Mulberry Sellers the same, as if he was artillery. You see, the charm about Mulberry is, he is so Catholic and unprejudiced that he fits in anywhere and everywhere. It makes him powerful good company, and as popular as Scandal. You go to the White House, when the president's holding a general reception sometime when Mulberry's there. Why, dear me, you can't tell which of them it is that's holding that reception. Well, he certainly is a remarkable man, and he always was. Is he religious? Clear to his marrow does more thinking and reading on that subject than any other except Russia and Siberia. Thrashes around over the whole field too. Nothing bigoted about him. What is his religion? She stopped, and was lost for a moment or two in thinking. Then she said, with simplicity, I think he was a Mohammedan or something last week. Washington started downtown now, to bring his trunk, for the hospitable Sellerses would listen to no excuses. Their house must be his home during the session. The colonel returned presently, and resumed work upon his plaything. It was finished when Washington got back. There it is, said the colonel, all finished. What is it for, colonel? Oh, it's just a trifle. Toy to amuse the children. Washington examined it. It seems to be a puzzle. Yes, that's what it is. I call it pigs in the clover. Put them in, see, if you can put them in the pen. After many failures, Washington succeeded, and was as pleased as a child. It's wonderfully ingenious. Colonel, it's ever so clever and interesting. Why, I could play with it all day. What are you going to do with it? Oh, nothing. Patent it and throw it aside. Don't you do anything of the kind. There's money in that thing. A compassionate look traveled over the colonel's countenance, and he said, money, yes. Pin money. A couple of 100,000, perhaps. Not more. Washington's eyes blazed. A couple of $100,000, do you call that pin money? The colonel rose and tiptoed his way across the room, closed a door that was slightly ajar, tiptoed his way to his seat again, and said, under his breath, you can keep a secret? Washington nodded his affirmative. He was too awed to speak. You have heard of materialization of departed spirits? Washington had heard of it, and probably didn't believe in it, and quite right too. The thing as practiced by ignorant charlatans is unworthy of attention or respect where there's a dim light and a dark cabinet, and a parcel of sentimental gulls gathered together, with their faith and their shudders and their tears already, and one and the same fatty degeneration of protoplasm and humbug comes out, and materializes himself into anybody you want, grandmother, grandchild, brother-in-law, witch of Ender, John Milton, Siamese twins, Peter the Great, and all such frantic nonsense. No, that is all foolish and pitiful. But when a man that is competent brings the vast powers of science to bear, it's a different matter, a totally different matter, you see. The specter that answers that call has come to stay. Do you note the commercial value of that detail? Well, the truth is that I don't quite know that I do. Do you mean that such, being permanent, not transitory, would give more general satisfaction, and so enhance the price of tickets to the show? Folly, listen to me, and get a good grip on your breath, for you are going to need it. Within 3 days I shall have completed my method, and then let the world stand aghast, for it shall see marvels. Washington, within 3 days, 10 at the outside, you shall see me call the dead of any century, and they will arise and walk. Walk? They shall walk forever, and never die again. Walk with all the muscle and spring of their pristine vigor. Colonel, indeed it does take one's breath away. Now do you see the money that's in it? I'm not really sure that I do. Great Scott, look here. I shall have a monopoly. They'll all belong to me, won't they? 2,000 policemen in the city of New York. Wages, $4 a day. I'll replace them with dead ones at half the money. Oh, prodigious. I never thought of that. $1,000 a day. Now I do begin to see. But will dead policemen answer? Haven't they up to this time? Well, if you put it that way, put it any way you want to. Modify it to suit yourself, and my lads'll still be superior. They won't eat, they won't drink, don't need those things. They won't wink for cash at gambling dens and unlicensed rum holes. They won't spark the scullery maids. And moreover, the bands of toughs that ambuscade them on lonely beats and cowardly shoot and knife them will only damage the uniforms and not live long enough to get more than a momentary satisfaction out of that. Why, Colonel, if you can furnish policemen, then of course, certainly I can furnish any line of goods that's wanted. Take the army, for instance, now 25,000 men. Expense, 22 millions a year. I will dig up the Romans, I will resurrect the Greeks, I will furnish the government, for 10 millions a year, 10,000 veterans drawn from the victorious legions of all the ages soldiers, that will chase Indians year in and year out on materialized horses, and cost never a cent for rations or repairs. The armies of Europe cost 2 billions a year, now I will replace them all for a billion. I will dig up the trained statesmen of all ages and all climes, and furnish this country with a Congress that knows enough to come in out of the rain, a thing that's never happened yet since the Declaration of Independence, and never will happen till these practically dead people are replaced with a genuine article. I will restock the thrones of Europe with the best brains and the best morals that all the royal sepulchres of all the centuries can furnish, which isn't promising very much, and I'll divide the wages and the civil list, fair and square, merely taking my half, and, Colonel, if the half of this is true, there's millions in it, millions. Billions in it, billions. That's what you mean. Why, look here. The thing is so close at hand, so imminent, so absolutely immediate, that if a man were to come to me now and say, Colonel, I am a little short, and if you could lend me a couple of billion dollars for, come in. This in answer to a knock. An energetic looking man bustled in with a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.